Hey guys, welcome back to Unleashed. Remember, we are the Resistance. We are so glad you're with us today. And today we've got a special guest back with us. We're going to have Roger Medley. You've heard him a couple of times on here before. Always rich, deep, great adventure stuff, great lessons. And speaking of lessons, Eric, I was down this weekend in Bloomington. I was just telling you about that, doing a men's conference, the Unleashed Men's Conference. 6 hours of speaking total.
That's crazy.
It was nuts. I mean, that wasn't all in one day, obviously. But, dude, I was telling Roger earlier, I said, I feel like a piece of, like, Wonder Bread that's been left out in the rain. That's the way I feel today.
Yeah, man. But, you know, it's behind you now.
Yeah. I was telling you, so down in Bloomington, there's something they call the Little Five Weekend. I don't even, maybe a bike race or something? I don't know what it is. But I got back to my hotel Saturday after doing the last event of that day. And I'm standing there, and right in the intersection in front of me, these three muscle cars come flying out. One looked like a Lamborghini. I think it might have been a Mustang, and then there was a Charger, and I forget what that something pack. I forget what that engine is called, the real hot one. He starts spinning donuts, blocking traffic in the middle, and the police came from everywhere. And I got the report last night. That guy got there was at least a half a dozen cars within 10 seconds on his trail.
Wow.
It's the report said he was doing 130 miles an hour. I guess he hit a police officer, but didn't kill the guy. And he had fake paper plates, and the dude got away.
For now.
Yeah. There's got to be enough cameras, too.
So the Little 500 is a track cycling race held annually during the third weekend of April at Bill Armstrong Stadium on the campus of IU.
Look at how quick you can just pick that stuff up.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, and you're like typing in. That's crazy. Well, man, let's dive in. Talking about crazy, have some crazy times with our guest today. Roger, man, good to have you here, buddy.
It's good to be had, brother.
Yeah. What is the thing you always say to me at the beginning? You'll call me on the phone and you'll say, is this the what?
Is this the person to whom I'm speaking?
Yeah. When somebody says, they'll go, hey, it's good to see you. It's good to be seen. I don't have all those one-liners. All mine are like bad dad jokes. But I guess that would kind of be like a bad dad joke, wouldn't it?
I've been accused of that.
Yeah, a few. Well, hey, let me just kind of kick us off today. So today's podcast title, for now, I put in is called Backcountry Lessons for Life and Leadership. Roger, what is the name of your website?
Well, I've actually got two. I've got one on the archery side, bow hunting side, called backcountrybowhunting.com. And the other one is highcountryministries.org. We're a 501c3.
Yeah, guys, check that out. And we'll talk more about that. And you can kind of maybe set some of the stuff up a little bit later. We're going to talk about with that. Well, let me just kind of intro today. So today we're going to dive like into survival, but it's not just survival like in the backcountry, right? But it's going to be in our lives. You know, that's one of the things that Roger and I resonate with. We love the backcountry. We love talking about, you know, the wilds and then bringing things back to the home front. So we're going to be talking a little bit about survival, you know, not only in the backcountry, but in our lives, you know, within leadership, you know, in our faith. So whether you're, you know, chasing elk at 10,000 feet or leading people back home, you know, the real battles that we fight, right, they're first in our mind. And they're won when you have the right people by your side. And Roger would be one of my, you know, they have the big five of Africa. I kind of have the big six, you know, like the, like SEAL Team Six in a way, I guess. Okay, you were like, you worked with operators a lot. How many are in some of those teams? How many guys would be in a team?
Wow. There's lots of, as I understand the SEALs specifically, there's lots of teams within a particular team. Like Team Six is development group, but there's, I don't know, I want to say over 100.
Wow.
In each of the teams. I don't know that for sure. I know somebody I can ask, though.
Yeah, I think you might, but we'll just kind of keep that between us. You could tell me, but then you have to kill me. But seriously, I have got like six guys around the country that, you know, when I punch my ticket, you know, if that time comes before you're gone, I would want you to be one of them. And, you know, you don't have guys ask me all the time, do you have those close group of guys? I say, you know, I've got a few, but most of them aren't close. I got a couple of them that are fairly close, but you know, a couple others are scattered around the country. That's just kind of life. But anyhow, so we were talking, you know, Roger's with us today. Roger, I'll give you a little bit of background on him. Roger's the president and the executive director of High Country Ministries. And he was already telling you that's a nonprofit outdoor ministry. And it's based in Colorado, and it reaches men through hunting, through retreats, through wilderness experiences. I kind of mentioned a second ago, you know, he's a former Air Force serviceman. He's an ordained pastor. He's a popular speaker. I know one time I was in Colorado. I think you were speaking at Bass Pro, Cabela's. He's a Colorado State champion archer, the co-author of Hunter's Field Notes. And Roger spent a long time combining his passion, you know, with his love for the outdoors, with his passion for discipling men. I know, Roger, when you and I would be out hunting, we were always talking about discipleship. You know, what could we do with men? What would reach men? What would they resonate with? And so Roger's going to tell you a little bit later. He's got some stuff he's going to be going into detail. I don't know if he would say launching it. I think it's something that's been evolving, but it's powerful, where he'll actually be taking, like, CEOs and leaders, you know, into the wilds to help them, you know, overcome things like burnout, maybe rebuilding their networks, you know, reconnecting with their purpose, whatever. Tell us a little bit about, you know, you and I got into a conversation and we were just talking because we're getting ready to go. We don't even really have the date set for our elk hunt in September yet, because we're kind of waiting on to see if I get drawn. We have spent so many nights in sleeping bags and bivy sacks looking up at the, you know, the stars, the, you know, just their falling stars, and just laying there and just watching all this stuff. And it's a totally different world when you get back into this backcountry, like Roger, you know, his website talks about, because things can go south on the count of one. And you and I have both experienced that, you probably more than me, as you live out there. But I know a couple of times that you and I've been out. One time I was borderline having hypothermia and you had to get me under a tarp. Another time I went blind because I got so dehydrated, and you spent a couple of days babysitting me in the hospital until I got my eyesight back.
Yeah. And by the way, you left your pacifier at our place. So I still owe you that.
Oh, you're killing me. Yeah. I think what happened on that trip was my water purification system, I did something to it, whatever it was, and I didn't want to say anything because I was like, yeah, I didn't want to act like I got a pacifier. It's time to hike up my big boy pants here. And I tried to just, you know, hide that. And I remember you and I were going up the switchbacks, going up to that upper parking lot. And I don't know how far we were back in, maybe three and a half miles or something. But it had been muddy and wet, and we're coming out. Our boots are like pancakes, you know, with the mud flaps on them. And I go over to you and I go, can you bend my fingers straight? I don't know if you remember that or not.
But I do.
I got so dehydrated that, you know, my finger just started curling up. But yeah, that was pretty crazy. But you and I were talking about an experience, because you've seen firsthand how quickly things can go sideways, you know, in the backcountry. And so, do you have any kind of like great stories that would kind of fit in with this today?
Yeah, I do. And actually, it was one that the area where you and I have talked about going. I've hunted in this particular area. It's near a little town called Yampa, which is maybe north central part of the state, not too far from Steamboat Springs. Now, sadly, where the wolves are.
Yeah.
But boy, that's another
a whole other topic. Yeah.
Don't get me started on that one. But
I know we don't want to talk about the three S's.
Right.
If you know, you know.
Right. Yeah. There was I've hunted in this area a number of times. I don't know, a dozen times probably. Maybe even more than that. But there was this place to me is significant. There was a time when I was, this was a long time ago, writing a book. I was going to entitle it Backcountry Bow Hunting. This was before Cameron Haynes came out. I didn't even know who he was. And I started writing a book and needed I had envisioned this nice big picture of me with a huge bull on the front cover, had just an afternoon. So an evening hunt and a morning hunt, then I was done. And I was, explaining this to the Lord. And I said, you know, God, really, I only have tonight and tomorrow morning. And now it's another 11 and a half months before I can get back out here. I'm almost done with the book. Can I have a bull? And through a series of encounters and lack of encounters, actually, with the Lord, he basically came back and said, do you want me to bless what you do, or do you want me to lead you to the blessing? And I pretty much fell to my knees right then, because one was all about Roger's ideas, Roger's plan, Roger's cool book. And the other one was surrendering whatever he chooses to be the blessing. Will I let him lead me to that? And so that's one reason why this place is significant. Another reason, as I was going out on a solo hunt, which frankly I would not recommend, but nonetheless I was, I couldn't find anybody to go. And then this buddy of mine called, and we'll just call him Paul for this story, real story. And Paul called. I was on the way out to Yampa. It was about a, I don't know, four and a half hour drive for me. The one cool thing in, about Colorado is we've got mountains everywhere. The sad thing is, because there's mountains everywhere, you can't easily get from here to there because there's a continental divide in the way, right? So it was only about 200 miles, but it was a long drive. He asked, hey, are you any chance you're out hunting this weekend? I said, yeah, I'm heading up here. Meet me. So we met in one of the small towns along I-70. And we stopped. We got batteries for our radios and some candy bars and stuff. Headed on up to this particular site where we were going to hunt for the next couple of days. And just to give the listeners a kind of a mental picture here, we're headed to the northern part of a north-south running ridge. There's a little town called Toponas, and your listeners will be able to look on the maps, figure out where this is. There's a road that comes out of Toponas to the northeast and snakes its way up to the top of this ridge. And we were on the northern end of this particular ridge. We get up there. It had just snowed, one of those times when it was 31.9 degrees, huge, wet, sloppy snowflake. So, you know, things were melting pretty much as they were landing, but
just get you wet.
Everything was wet.
Yeah.
And so we get up there and trying to make the best use of our time. I said, okay, there's a pond over here about a half a mile from the road to the west. There's a trail here. Told them how to get there. You go over there and check that out. I'm going to go over here into this bowl and I'll see what I can see here, do some calling, but let's get back here to the road before dark. There's the key, before dark. There's a lot of dark timber. If you're not within eyesight, literally of the road, you're not going to find it, even though it's at the top of the ridge. I'll prove to you how that's can be the case. So I went over, did some calling, heard some cows. It's getting dark, starting to get dark. So I headed back to the camp. And Paul never showed. I figured he would be there first, but he wasn't. I waited, gets dark. Paul's still not back. Now I'm trying him on the radio the whole time. And we had done a radio check before we split. And radios, they were working fine. And so it's getting darker and darker. And I'm getting really concerned. He doesn't know the area. And he's an accomplished backpacker and hiker and everything. So, his skill-wise, I didn't have a whole lot of concern for him. But now it's getting really dark and I can't get a hold of him. And he's only supposed to be a half mile away. And those radios half mile should work plenty well. So time goes on and I'm driving up and down the road looking for him. And this is how concerned over him I was. I started honking the horn as I was driving up and down this road. And I apologized to all the hunters that were there, but I did stop and talk to those guys. told him that I had a buddy who was apparently lost, and they understood. So I was honking the horn so he could at least hear where the road was. He never showed. I went out looking for him. There was no moon, lots of drop-offs, some hidden cliffs in amongst this terrain. And I decided that, well, you know what? I'm going to head back to camp, because looking for one person is a whole lot better than looking for two people. So I get back and I get on the radio and I said, Paul, it's 11:28. I don't know where you are. I've come looking for you, but I can't find you. I followed his tracks for a while, lost his tracks. I just said, I'm going to turn off the radio, and I promise you, I will be back out in the morning looking for you.
Boy, that's a sick feeling.
Man, I, of all the things I have experienced, you know, because your mind can go in all kind of, you know, crazy directions. Has he fallen? Has he impaled himself? You know, has he knocked out?
Well, you got wolves, you got bears, you got mountain lions.
Right, right. And he encountered three bears that particular night, a mama with her two babies. But but I'm telling you, telling him what I thought he, you know, I was hoping he could hear, that, you know, I'm turning the radio off. So he knows, and I know too, for the next 8 or so hours, he's on his own. And he was not prepared. We did a little bit of map study. He had his iPhone with him. He had a headlamp, a backpack, a real thin waterproof jacket, but no layers really underneath that, a t-shirt. And that was it. And it was, you know, in the 30s when we got there, and wet. So he, and this was supposed to be a, you know, quick out and back kind of thing. 45 minutes really is all we should have been apart. Anyway, so, you know, I wake up many times through the night. He's still not back, still not back. And I ultimately got up the next morning and called the sheriff's department, who ultimately got a search and rescue crew notified to come look for him. And lo and behold, the search and rescue guy showed up in his Jeep. And I thought, one guy, it was just one guy. I thought, okay, well, that's a little odd.
They cut their budget a little.
Well, I'll tell you why here in a second. Really, the bottom line is what they expect is if it's less than 24 hours, they expect them to show up.
Yeah.
That's just how it doesn't always turn out that way, but normally that's the way it turns out. If it had gone beyond 24 hours, they would have gotten a whole team out there, is what the guy told me. But the guy shows up, and 10 minutes later, here comes Paul in somebody else's truck. Now, I mentioned that this road is right at the very top of this north-south ridge. What Paul had done is actually on the west side of this ridge, is he paralleled that road for about 5 miles and ended up running into that feeder road that you take to get up on top of the ridge.
Was he on a trail or anything, or just kind of just, you know, stepping over logs? Because that, I know how hard going that is.
Well, probably all but the last half a mile was just bushwhacking.
Yeah, that's hard.
Well, so here's where some of the miraculous happens. And discovered something about cell phones, at least back then. So this was 10 years ago when this happened. Your cell phone has got to be connected to a tower for it to know which way north, south, east, west is, for the compass to work. It's got to be connected to a cell tower. you can't just pull it out and it work as a compass in the middle of the ocean. So, you know, he's using bad data as far as his compass on his phone goes. His phone lasted hours, like 5 hours or something, at 3% power.
Yeah, that doesn't happen.
Right. Why did God do that for him? Because he almost fell off a cliff. When he almost fell off the cliff, you know, the gyrations and trying to grab onto things, his backpack spun around, the top was open, and his headlamp goes crashing down this cliff. So the flashlight on his cell phone was all he had. Turns out, on the radio side of things, that he had two radios. The brand new batteries we got, I watched him put the batteries in the radio. He put them in radio A, and then when we left camp, he picked up radio B, which had dead batteries in it. So it was enough to work once, but it was dead after that. So the guy, it was actually a retired outfitter that had hunted in that area before. He's the one that brought Paul up, and we got to chatting. And so I wanted to wring his neck. I also wanted to wring my neck too, because I was familiar with the area and he wasn't. We never should have separated. There's all sorts of lessons that we can learn there. But I think the longer term solution is learning how to read a map, learning things like, well, my phone compass is not going to work unless I'm connected to cell towers. Maybe I shouldn't rely on electronic gadgets. Maybe I should have a traditional compass and a map and know how to use them. What is declination, which is the difference between where true north and magnetic north are, because they are in two very different places. And your compass points to magnetic north. The magnetic north actually moves. About every 3 years, you need to update your maps, because magnetic north, that huge iron ore deposit, has moved enough that the directions, the lines on the map, when it comes to magnetic north, they're not consistent. If you're talking latitude and longitude, they absolutely are, but not when it comes to magnetic north. So,
you know, I wonder how he, you know, being wet and being that cold, and that's so dangerous. I mean, it's shocking to me that he didn't have hypothermia sink in, because that you start getting confused. And, you know, once your body core gets below 95, I mean, you really do get confused. And at that point, you know, it's really dangerous.
Yeah, well, frankly, I think he probably did have some of that, more than likely. But, you know, he was awake the entire night. And, oh, by the way, my source says that each SEAL team has roughly 200 people in it.
Okay, gotcha.
So during the night, he ran into a mama bear, two cubs. They didn't really give him a problem, other than he's really exposed and he has no idea where he is. And it's a mother with two cubs. You know, that'll increase the pucker factor.
Oh, big time. Well, you know, twice I've been charged in Colorado.
Right.
Yeah. It's spooky. It's really spooky. And people don't realize how fast they can move.
Oh yeah. Well, even those, you know, those little cubs, they don't necessarily show a whole lot of fear.
Yeah.
They can be pretty aggressive. Anyway, he, you know, as he's hiking, he realizes he's lost, which fortunately that was good for him that he realized it, you know, because some of us can go through whatever situation we're going through and, you know, I'm fine. I got a handle on this. And you really don't. But so he ran across an old mining cabin, which, man, they're everywhere up in the backcountry of Colorado. So he hung out there for a little bit. He's getting cold. He said he was doing jumping jacks and push-ups.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
Just to try to not even stay warm, is the way he put it, but to keep from getting colder. Right?
Yeah.
Because there's a difference.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Running in place kind of thing. Doing all that kind of activity just to make it through till daytime, to where at least he can get a good idea of the terrain and that sort of stuff. And it's really pretty thick where he was at.
Well, and probably there's a two-edged sword here going on, because you're trying to stay warm, so you're doing more with your body, but you're burning calories. You've got water in your body that's being depleted, because you probably don't have a lot with you because you weren't planning on staying out.
I'm not even sure if he had water with him, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, that's spooky.
And again, you know, I should have been a good, good hunting partner and made sure we both had it, because I had it. I've got in my little pack I use, I've got everything I'm going to need, from game bags to water to some food, not a lot, you know, if it's just a day thing.
Well, and you used to tease me, because when I first started hunting out there, I mean, you're used to this. You're a backcountry person. I mean, you're used to going out elk hunting and setting up little camps. And, you know, I grew up in the East Coast, you know, in Pennsylvania, and it was deer hunting there. But I didn't have anything like that. And the first two times I think we hunted together, you used to make fun of me. You're like, do you got the kitchen sink in that backpack with you? Because I was like, you guys are taking these day packs, and I'm taking like this Denali, right? This big, massive Gregory pack, you know, that's made to climb, you know, like Mount Everest. Yeah, that was funny.
Well, you know, and here's one of the things I do appreciate about hunting out here, is that once you've done it a little bit, you know, there are some verses that tell us to, I call it the hiking verse or the 14er verse. In Colorado, we've got 54 peaks that are over 14,000 feet. So go bagging the 14ers is a thing that, you know, that's an activity that's real popular out here. And so there's a verse that really speaks to that, which is that we are to lay off every weighty sin that holds us down, right? Get rid of the things that are holding you down, that are holding you back. And you spend some time out in the backcountry, you realize, well, probably I don't need this. I don't need that. I can get by without this. That other thing, yep, that I need that. So you prioritize, and you know, at some point you learn to, you know, multi-purpose things. You know, one item really should be good for more than one thing.
So what was that verse again? Read that verse again.
Well, I didn't read it. I quoted it. So you're my friend. You're not supposed to call me out.
Well, I was just thinking about, you know, laying off, when you're thinking about the weight of sin that holds us back. You know, and I was just speaking for that men's retreat this weekend. I was talking about, you know, if you carry that stuff with you, because here's the thing. Psalm 103 said, God's done what? He's cast our sin as far as the east is from the west. You know, was it Romans 8:28? Therefore, there is no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. So why do we keep choosing to carry this stuff? And, you know, because at our core as a believer, you know, you and I have both taught a number of small group type things together in the mountains. You know, we've gone up there and led men up there, and we've had men show up for this thing that had never really been out there before. And remember that year we were out there doing this, and some of the guys didn't have any base layers. And they made a trek back out. I don't know how long it took them to get back to their trucks, to sleep in their trucks. But I remember they didn't show up the next morning for a long time. And then finally we found out they were freezing. So I think we drove, was it to Durango?
Pagosa Springs.
Pagosa, to try to get them some base layers. And whatever that time of the year was, I don't know why they couldn't find some, but it was... But man, being prepared, and that, I think the whole thing, what you just said was, you know, not carrying that burden of sin that we have. And I think so many people think that they have to. because they say, well, if I don't remind myself of all the sin that I've done, I might fall into it again, and I don't want to experience the consequence. Well, I mean, the whole thing was when you're walking with God, when you understand your identity is in Him, you don't have to keep beating yourself up. Now, you've had consequences, and those are great teachers. When you tell that child, don't you touch that stove, and they go ahead and touch it anyhow, they're probably not going to do it again. But that whole thing of not carrying that thing with you all the time, because it's something that makes that burden, God bore the burden for us. And He doesn't want, no, I think it's important that we know consequences don't feel good. I think that night when whoever, well, you called him Paul, whatever his real name was, you know, whatever he experienced out there that night were the consequences of poor decisions. And so in the future, he probably won't do that again. He's learned from it.
I can guarantee you he won't.
Yeah. Well, and yeah. Me, I mean, some of the mistakes I made with you, luckily you were there to bail me out, and you did twice on big ones. You know, for those of you who are listening, what are you talking about? Well, one time, it was in the middle of the night, we were down in a gully, and we had a gully washer storm come up that night, and the stream we crossed, you know, getting to where we were wasn't very wide at all. But by, you know, when we wake up, there's thunder and lightning starting about midnight, and by the time we woke up at first light, we're surrounded by water. And I've got pictures of us standing on like this little island in the middle of it, and there were some trees that were as big around as like a Volkswagen that were being swept down. So this wasn't something you just jump in and wade yourself across. I mean, you'd gotten pulled under that stuff. That was one when I got the beginning of hypothermia, and you got me under a tarp and got me some hot liquids in my body. And then the other one was when I got dehydrated, and you and I, we made it back to Pagosa Springs that night because I was a mess. He said, let's get you some water. So I thought guzzling water would fix it. Well, I was so far gone with dehydration by the time you and I went to breakfast the next morning in the hotel. And remember I go, why is it so smoky in here? And you said, there's no smoke in here. So I go out to the lobby and I said to the manager, I said, is there a fire or something? There's smoke everywhere. He looks at me and he goes, sir, there's no smoke. And by the time I got to my room, two floors up, I looked in the mirror and it's like someone taking a hot shower. You can't even see your image. And you and, I'm trying to think who it was with us on that trip.
Brian,
you're like, okay, we're taking you to the hospital now. And one of the funniest parts of the whole thing was we get there, we're in the emergency room, and the nurse walks up to me and she says, what letters can you see on the wall? And I said, what wall? And then she goes, all right, we're going to have to take a urine sample. And I'm like, well, where's the bathroom? She starts leading me over and she goes, well, are you going to need help? And I can remember you and Brian busting out laughing at that comment. And I was like, no, I think I can handle that part.
Yeah.
But those lessons, you know, because one of the things that you love to do is you love to be able to take life lessons out of something like that more than just, I'll pack something differently. I'll make sure I've got good batteries in the radio. You always pull something out of it. What's some of the things when you look at this that you apply back to life that you could tie it back to?
Well, there's a number of things. One of them, really above all, is that for me, his hunting partner, there were some things that I could have and should have done a little differently, right? I really needed to spend some time making sure he was equipped to do what he was doing. And it's not questioning his ability. You know, there's a story that we could go into perhaps another time when we were doing a special ops exercise and we came so close to crashing our airplane within 20 feet, I'm sure, of hitting trees. And the bottom line was we had some issues with the radio gear in the airplane, and everybody was distracted. So everybody only did their job. There was no me watching over your shoulder just to double check you, not to do your job, but just to double check you, right? Everybody did only their job, and it almost killed us. So, you know, did I need to be checking his stuff? Yeah, I did. You know, while I check your stuff, yeah, I will. And it's not because I don't think you can handle it. It's just because it's the smart thing to do. But I've been reading a book called Discipling by Mark Deaver. I think that's how you pronounce his last name. And on the opening pages, it says, when a church listens and follows, it begins to look like the one with a capital zero, the one it is following. Mm. A church will look like him as it listens to him. So in Hebrews 12, verse 1 is the verse we were referring to earlier. We need other people in our life to, I don't know, I'll use an overused term, hold us accountable. And I don't mean that in a forceful way.
No, I know what you mean. It's like holding us capable of what we really can do.
And double check, you know, double downing on the things that are important. You know, I was a COO of a tech company a few years ago before I resigned. And that summer, I ended up in a hospital thinking I was convinced I was having a heart attack. Absolutely convinced. And maybe we're getting into some of the other things that High Country Ministries, or HCM as we refer to it, you know, that we do. But we've got to have friends that will invest in us and just double check us. You know, hey, is that the right thing to do? Have you thought about this? It is so easy to step into things and, well, I don't want to offend him. I don't want to question him. So, you know, I'm not going to offend him by not, I'm going to not offend him by not questioning him. And that's completely unsafe. It's unwise.
Yeah.
And frankly, I think it's ungodly. So we've got to invest in others. And on this outdoor thing, if anybody wants to come out here or have me go there and show you how to read a map and orient a compass and, you know, why do you want a $30 compass over a $10 compass? I can tell you why. Are there times when you need the $70 compass? Yes. Are there times when you don't need it? Yeah. And frankly, the majority of people in the U.S. don't need the $70 compass. And if you want to know more about that, let's talk at another time.
Well, I know you rely on your gear. I've been with you and you know your gear and you do have all the above. And I think, like you said, there's times when you're going to need this, but you know, because you've been trained, that's a big thing. And a lot of guys today just don't get the training, and not just like what we're talking about with radios or compasses, but when the enemy's coming after them, you know, we want to be a warrior. Every guy here wants to get, hey, I've got a sword God's given me. I can either tear my family apart or I can protect them. But how do I do that? And this is one of the things, as you and I were talking about, you know, you moving in with through High Country Ministries and bringing CEOs out there. You know, sometimes it'll be a one-on-one. Sometimes you even said, Brent, why don't you come out with me and we can do a two-on-one with somebody. We can take them out there and, you know, it can be three of us. And, you know, I'm open to that as well. But this was something that you had dreamed up, and you're equipped for this. I do know that. Absolutely, 100%. And, you know, as I was going through in this new book I was talking about last week, one of the phases that I have in this is the five phases of the warrior. There's one of the phases, it's called the ruling warrior. And I think this is a lot of who, like the CEOs that you're talking about, because the ruling warrior phase, you know, that's when a man steps into leadership. And the real test isn't, you know, how much he can carry. You know, like I was trying to carry everything with me. We talked about sin being this heavy load. It's whether he knows how to share the load, to trust others, how to build something that's going to outlive him. And the ruling warrior moves from being a fighter and a builder, to becoming a builder. And here's the thing. No man can do that alone. We have to have brothers to walk with. And I know how important it really is to have that other man, because, Roger, you've been that person in my life. It's been there for me, done that. And I wouldn't be alive today, seriously. I mean, that's not a joke. If you hadn't helped me survive, you know, a couple of different times. Let me kind of ask you a question and kind of start wrapping this thing up. You know, Roger, if you could, and we'll give you the website. What is the website, Roger, if somebody wants to come and find out more about that?
High Country Ministries, so with an S, .org.
And then they can just get a hold of you with that. But if I could ask you a question, if you could leave the men listening with one challenge today about survival, about faith, or about leadership, what would it be?
How long are you going to let your pride stand in the way of you being properly equipped?
Yeah, I think a lot of us, as the posers within all of us, we don't want to admit we don't know how to do something. I was talking with guys this weekend. I said, you know, YouTube is my friend because, you know, my dad was the guy, was a great guy, but he was the guy, here, hold the flashlight, son. But it was never, let me hold the flashlight, now you do what I do. So I think it's really important, like what you're saying, you know, how long are we going to wait? We need to know the Word of God, and we need to know how to apply it. I don't care what you do. I had a pastor I was just speaking with recently, and he's just like, he's burnt out. And I think that's what happens with so many CEOs. You know, they're in the leadership roles that they're in. There's a thing called the law of the lid that John Maxwell does. And he says, you can only take people as far as you are willing or have gone yourself. And that's why I think what you're going to be doing with some of these men, because they might have the leadership skills, you know, within a business, but to be able to set proper boundaries, to be able to find renewal and refreshment in their own life because they're so busy, they need someone who can pour into them. That's what I love about doing coaching with men. My job is to really pour into them, to not try to require a lot, but to ask a lot of questions so that they can learn how to get to the right answers that are going to work for them. Anything, well, Roger, you wanted to
go ahead? Yeah, just maybe in the another 4 minutes, maybe. There's doing some studies on, you know, what are the challenges that the C-suite, really, not just CEOs, but as a COO, I dealt with a lot of this as well. There's a few things that are common again with their struggles, which frankly are common with probably most men. And that is the imposter syndrome, where you're stepping into somebody else's role and, you know, now you've got to live up because, you know, the last guy's out and now you're the guy in, you're the one at bat. And it's just understood that you're going to perform better. Well, can you really perform better? You don't know. You don't know until you get in there, but there's this pressure. There's also, you've got to mask your vulnerability because how's that saying, you know, mm-hmm. better to keep your mouth shut and think you're a fool than to open your mouth and remove all doubt.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, don't be vulnerable to anybody because they're going to see that, you know, maybe a whole lot of your skills that are on your resume maybe are truly not there.
Yeah, blown up.
Maybe you're
going to
be found out.
Yeah.
So a lot of the pressures that they deal with, the C-suite, we deal with. We've got to learn how to be vulnerable. We've got to learn that I'm the one that God made. I'm not Brent. Brent's not Roger.
Yeah.
You know, and the list can go on there. But we've got to build a network of trusted support. We have to. We've got to learn where to set boundaries. We've got to learn where to delegate, where that is appropriate, and to hang on to the things that, you know, truly are my responsibility. And getting out in the backcountry, frankly, you know, with these, what I call rugged retreats. And you and I have done a few of those together, yeah. which have been a blast and have honestly, I'm still getting people asking, hey, when are we doing it again?
There's just something about being out there in the mountains, the smell of the pine, the sound of the wind, wondering if the storm is going to hit. Can I withstand it? You know, that question, do I have what it takes? Within a man, and so some of you listening that might be thinking about going out with Roger or something we do with that, it does require more of you. And I think men want that because there's like this, do I have what it takes? You know, what I'm called upon, can I, will I, do I have what it takes? And that's one of the things that I think so many of these guys, when they come out with us and we were doing that, it's something that they're not used to. And it's like one of those like Navy SEAL camps for guys who are civilians. They can kind of go in and get a taste of what it must be like. But it's that called upon in that moment, can I, will I, do I have what it takes? And I think what you just said with some of these, you know, CEOs or COOs or different things, they're put in that position and it's a great challenge, but they need the tools to be able to follow through. And I think that's
one. You know, frankly, the bottom line is, do they have what it takes? The answer is yes. They just don't know it.
Yep. Yep.
And when it comes to the C-suite guys, you know, if you're interested in coming out, just Roger at Roger at highcountryministries.org or visit the website with the contact us page. But here's what I expect of them. I am not going to provide their sleeping bag, their tent, Well, maybe the tent I will, but their sleeping bag, their food, I'm not going to supply that for them.
The base layers.
I'll give them the list of what to get. And this is for two reasons, because it's the intangible that I want to give to them. I'll guide them through the tangible things, the physical things, but it's the heart things. And I want them to have the gear when they get home so they can go out and do it again.
Yeah.
I mean, you and I both have talked at length about the benefits of getting out into the backcountry. And while it's work, it is so rejuvenating.
Yeah. I hope I get drawn. Well, I want to be out there with you in September. Well, let me go ahead and wrap this up. And Roger, thanks again. I think this is the third time or fourth time I've had you on the podcast. I think this is like episode 94 or 5. I mean, we're getting up close to 100 here.
Wow.
I know. Well, man, this has been a really powerful reminder today that, you know, whether you're chasing elk, you know, whether you're chasing your God-given purpose, you can't do it alone. We just heard that. And how important it is to have, you know, a brother, you know, walking beside you. So if today's episode really hits home, you know, do us a favor. Give us a like, you know, hit subscribe, you know, share Unleashed with someone who needs it. And again, if you want to learn more about when, you know, what Roger's doing to impact leaders through the wilderness adventure stuff and discipleship, head over to highcountryministries.org and check it out. So until next time, guys, you know, keep fighting the good fight. Remember, you were made for more. You are made to be dangerous for good because you've been unleashed. We'll see you next time.